Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Fiona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We are going to be welcoming back today our guest, Donna Winant, founder of Families, Friends, and Individuals with Mentally Ill, FFIMI director, and also her colleague, Annette Burke, and she will be bringing on others as well to bring us an update on their ongoing activities to bring about changes in the penal system as families, friends, and individuals for mentally ill and their networking affiliates focus on the most appropriate alternatives to addressing the needs of the mentally ill incarcerated individuals as well as those outside the penal system. There is an enormous need for criminal justice reform as the population of incarcerated men, women, and youth escalates. There are 2.3 million incarcerated individuals and primarily in areas of mental health, wrongful convictions, victims who became offenders, and first-time offenders, many serving life without parole, in some states, the death penalty. In other areas, they are in institutions trying to be addressing the issues of the mental health in the United States. The U.S. is the only country in the world with mass incarceration, and it needs to end. Individuals with mental health issues need long-term residential treatment facilities, not prisons. So let's welcome our guest today, Donna Winant, and also Annette Burke. Donna, Annette, are you on with us?
I'm here. This is Donna. Thanks, Leona, for having me back.
Always, as always, it's a pleasure having you on, Donna. And is Annette on with us? Okay, I don't hear Annette. So she did mention, though, she has to leave at 2 o'clock. She has a prior engagement.
Yes.
So if she comes on, she can discuss the topic that she wanted to discuss. But in the meantime, Donna, do you want to start off by, again, letting the audience know about yourself and how you came about to found the organization that you started, FFIMI, and also what your current activities are?
Okay, thanks, Leona. I'm Donna Winant. I have a loved one who has a serious mental illness, and he did end up into the system of Bridgewater State Hospital. And early on, I began to have to learn about mental illness because I didn't really have much of a background. But I started to advocate in very small ways and unusual ways, and I caught the attention of the then director of the Disability Law Center and was pulled in to advocate with Governor Baker prior to his changes in 2017. So I was honored to be a part of that process. And it began with Governor Baker realizing that the Department of Corrections and the police officers who were inside were not trained, and there had been, you know, unfortunately, there had been a death that precipitated the change, and that the police officers did not have the proper training. They're not medical or psychiatric providers. So he put in a system of medical, clinical, and clinical care, and medical, clinical, and psychiatric care to serve this population. However, as time went on, you know, we were very happy to see the increased medical attention, the increased level of care across this system. But we realized what was happening is that the purpose of restoring someone to competency is to send them into a penal system. So you take this very sick individual with a severe mental illness, an illness that they did not choose. They had, you know, activities that led them into this system, and yet they were, you know, incompetent, incomprehensible. So when they're committing these acts under duress and mental illness, and then they're taken into the criminal justice system, and they're not well, they're not competent, but the mental health, then the criminal justice system works to get them competent to a legal situation where they can understand at least what is a jury, what is a judge, what is a trial. Doesn't mean that they're not still severely mentally ill. So you bring them to trial, you put them in a jail or prison, and they still are severely mentally ill. And jails and prisons were not built to handle this population. Psychiatric hospitals, on the other hand, are the persons with expertise to handle these people. So you send them where there's little to no care just to let a human being who's ill decompensate physically, mentally. They can be victimized because they're vulnerable, you know, in a situation where there may be high criminal elements. So it's just really wrong to do that. It's just wrong. It's immoral, and it's wrong to treat a human being with an illness that way.
You know, I want to expand on that, Donna. I admire you for starting such an organization. I had, at one time, I had great respect for the Department of Mental Health. However, I have lost a lot of respect for them because years ago, when anyone that had mental illnesses did something that needed to be reported, they would always say they can't do anything about it until the person commits an offense, commits a crime, or does something wrong. Yet when that person or those people end up actually doing something wrong and they go to prison, the Department of Mental Health will not get involved. And I get so upset because had they not initially said what they said, and I'm going to put everyone on mute because there's a distraction in the background. The Department of Mental Health, even the American Psychological Association, they need to get more involved, and it really upsets me that they don't. When someone is acting out or something is not right with an individual, they will always say, unless the individual, if that individual is over the age of 21 or 18, that individual has to do something wrong in order for them to get involved. And yet they do not get involved after the individuals do something wrong and end up in a position where no one has any control except the DOC, the Department of Corrections, who is not there to help but to harm. So this is something I just wanted to bring out real quickly. I want the audience to know, organizations like yours, there has to be more of them, because there's not enough. And NAMI is another one I admire. They do a lot as well. But with your organization, your committee, you actually go out and you actually get involved trying to bring in independent providers from hospitals and elsewhere. And I really admire your organization for that.
Hello, Leona.
Annette? Hi, it's Annette.
I'm here.
I understand, Annette, that you have to leave at 2 o'clock, so I would really appreciate it if you could introduce yourself to the audience and also talk about whatever you need to talk about so that you don't have to lose out towards the end when you have to leave. And I appreciate your being on as well.
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone. My name's Annette Burke. And I became an advocate for mental health well over 10 years ago. I started to advocate when I have a loved one who was caught in the system, and it just became tougher and tougher to get help. So I educated myself with a lot of different programs and resources, but I'm going to be honest with you. This group, the FEMI group, and particularly the Bridgewater State Hospital Parents group, was one that really captured my attention. Like you said, Leona, there's a lot of groups out there, large organizations that speak up, you know, bring issues forward, make recommendations, but it seems like it takes forever to get anything done. What I want to say is that small voices matter. Our voices carry more weight and more power than you can ever imagine. And you know, this group was fortunate enough to have their voices be heard in many ways. And one of the recent ways was we were able to gather and we were interviewed by a student dispatcher, and her name was Summer Maxwell. She wrote an article on Bridgewater State Hospital And a lot of the concerns that are not addressed under the Department of Corrections. And these are very serious, important issues that need to be continuously brought forward, and they need to be addressed. There is no excuse, absolutely no excuse, for our loved ones to be living under the conditions that Bridgewater State Hospital has them under. And if you read through this article, there's so many red flags in here that as a taxpayer, I would want to know why our legislators are not doing more to help those with severe mental illness stuck in a penal system or stuck in a facility that is not livable by any means. And, you know, why are we allowing the DOC to have such tight control over those that need support and help the most? We have those through the court system, sadly, something tragic has to happen before most of these individuals' loved ones can receive help and care. They're sent to Bridgewater State Hospital to be evaluated. Most of them, when they are placed in Bridgewater State Hospital, they're confused. They're in some type of psychosis state. They're just, you know, at the worst, if you will, of their mental health symptoms. We are placing them in a facility to be evaluated to determine their level of care and need. Bridgewater State Hospital, if you ask anyone on the street the reputation of Bridgewater State Hospital, they cringe. They say, ooh, oh my God, that place is horrible. Well, guess what? It is. And we are allowing the Bridgewater State Hospital to make life decisions for those who need mental health treatment the most, to be placed in a penal system or placed in a facility where they're not getting the proper level of care, nutrition, medical treatment, individual therapy. I could go on and on and on. So we need to really start speaking up more, engaging our legislators like there's no tomorrow, and push for these changes to take place. One of the pieces in the article that really stuck out for me was how Governor Baker had the opportunity to push and support Bridgewater State Hospital, and it's constantly being vetoed. He is allowing the DOC to maintain control, and I know Governor Baker is gone, so we can only hope that our new governor will take some serious effort to help those and change the course of the treatment at Bridgewater State Hospital. But there's over $2 billion a year dedicated to mental health. Where is all this money going? Where are the funds going? The building at Bridgewater State Hospital is falling apart. If it were a living facility for others, it would be condemned and closed based on the DOC reports and all of the findings that have come up. The conditions are just, they're not livable, and it's not a therapeutic environment. The DOC continues to hold the power over WellPath. Any decision that WellPath wants to make has to go through the DOC. And it can take weeks, months, years for a simple decision to be made for the better good of those in Bridgewater State Hospital. It should not take that long. And another piece that bothered me was, as far as the DLC is also attempting, you know, to gut the recent law that allows some inmates under the DOC care to petition to be transferred to DMH. Why is that? Why do they want to hold on to those in Bridgewater State Hospital, so much. Why is there such a tight control when there are different levels of care that is needed? Those in Bridgewater State Hospital are all held to the same standards. There is many different types of individuals in Bridgewater State Hospital, and there are several that could be moved to a DMH facility sooner than later. Why is it taking 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years to make a decision to move someone to DMH to allow them a better way of life? It should not be so difficult to have these implementations take place. And the DOC is also, concerned about their staff. One of the main reasons they want to keep control of Bridgewater State Hospital is to, keep the oversight, and it also maintains jobs for their DOC staff at the hospital. Well, that's not a good enough reason for the DOC to hold control. And the difference between someone in Bridgewater State Hospital and someone in DMH facility is like night and day. And I know we do have some folks that could speak to that, but I will tell you that when someone leaves Bridgewater State Hospital and goes to a DMH facility, it's like moving from the bottom of the barrel to the top of the hill and being treated like a king or a queen. That is the difference, and it should not be that way. We're all human. We have so many. It just really frustrates me. I'm sorry.
Interject because, something that Annette said really struck a chord. Why do they keep people there without moving them on? My grandson has been at Bridgewater State Hospital with no charges now for over a year, and he's been there 8.5 years. I'm watching him physically deteriorate. His teeth are rotting. He gets very minimal dental care. They don't encourage him to move forward when he's incapable. He has cysts under his arms. He's got huge red blotches that are getting worse on his face, his neck, his chest, his back. He's not getting all of the acne medication. He did get the acne medication when his mother pushed for it, but he cannot get the cream that he's asked for. He's asked for a better nutritional diet. He is just deteriorating. And another thing is that when they have the court hearings at Bridgewater State Hospital, it is very, very disturbing because I see the psychologists from Bridgewater State Hospital and the attorneys, they act very adversarial against the person with their symptoms. They hold poor grooming against them. They hold the fact that they lack insight into their disease against them. It's very disturbing. It's more like they're prosecutors than someone trying to assist someone with a serious mental illness. And it's like a shame and blame. It was shocking to me when I watched one of the court hearings. And since we've watched others, and other family members have reported the same, and I've talked with Christopher Blake's office, Christopher Blake himself, and one of his other attorneys, and they're in agreement that it's kind of a shame and blame the patient for their lack of progress. They're the caretakers. They're supposed to be the people who are healing. So, it's a really sad system, and our loved ones deserve much better.
I appreciate both of you talking about this because I'll tell you, I was watching the news this morning with the work that they're going to be doing in Boston at the train station where that, unfortunately, where that professor was killed coming out of the train. But the thing is, they wait until things get so bad before they try to repair stuff. And this is what's happening with the individuals you're talking about. The DOC gets all kinds of monies. for exactly doing these things. And I'll tell you, Bridgewater, I'm going on 76. Bridgewater State Hospital Prison has, it's been there for years and years and years. It is time for a manicure. And unfortunately, the money's not going where it should go. The people that should be putting all that money into getting some real, extensive, appropriate medical treatment for these individuals, psychological treatment, is not going where it should go. This is why, Donna, I am so glad that you and others that are even on this line waiting to be listening in or waiting to be called in, I want to thank all of you. Because we have people that do nothing until it happens to them. And there are a lot of organizations out there getting all kinds of money to advocate for such things as you are doing. And these people have no investment in the prison. They have no one in the prisons going through the mental illnesses or going through any of these problems. And yet they're getting all the funding to do absolutely nothing. I just want to bring that out because we need to bring in more appropriate, independent medical and psychological providers into the system rather than having these contracted agencies like WellPath, which is all over the internet, having over 1,000 lawsuits filed against them. And this is the contracted provider that the Department of Corrections in Massachusetts and other states have working on the loved ones of those who are fighting for their loved ones incarcerated.
And Leona, they're a multi-billion dollar company, and they make their profits, in my estimation and in my experience, by giving as little medical care as possible. And the less medical care one gets, the less dental care one gets, the less, if you mismanage their medication to control them, so you have less to do for them, the more profit they make.
Exactly. We've worked with former incarcerated who come out and their teeth are rotted out. You know, it's almost as though they've been homeless for years and years and years when they should have been getting that treatment right along. And now a lot of the incarcerated are even afraid to go to the medical providers or the psychological providers, because they're afraid there's going to be more damage done to them intentionally. Now, there's some people on the line. I don't know if you girls want to answer some questions or talk to these people. I can have them introduce themselves if you want to do it now or after.
I think it would be great to hear from them.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Can we hear from some of you, starting with 978, ending with 2202?
That would be me.
Okay, 781-2853.
That would be me. Hi, Leona. My name is Harry. How are you?
Good. How are you, Larry B?
I'm good, thank you. And good afternoon, everyone, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody. This is not an easy situation that we're discussing today.
Much needed, though.
Much needed, absolutely. And I think this is a great platform, and hopefully we can build this because we need all the help we can get.
Exactly.
I will tell you personally, I'm an advocate for the patients at the Bridgewater State Hospital. I'm one of those advocates that Annette mentioned earlier in her discussion, and she was point on. Everything that she said was absolutely 100% accurate. And for me, both Donna and Annette both know that I am very sensitive when it comes to leadership, and I can tell you the leadership at Bridgewater State Hospital is not the leadership that should be in place. The person that's in charge out of Bridgewater State Hospital has a nurse background. In my opinion, that person that's in charge should be a psychiatrist with leadership credentials and experience that's proved in the past. After all, there's 250 patients there, approximately, with severe mental illness, so we need to make sure that the proper leadership in place, we don't have it there. It's absolutely no way that person that is in charge at Bridgewater State Hospital should be there. Okay, so just to build upon that, I wanted to talk a little bit about the laws and the legislators. In the past 10 months, I've sent out our legislators about 39 emails, and basically touching base on all of the issues that we've been speaking about in the last 20 minutes. And occasionally I get a response. Most of the time I get no response. And that tells me a lot about the individuals that do not respond. They don't care. They are not in their positions to use their platform to help people with mental health illnesses. What we need to do is we need to keep pushing those legislators, and we need louder voices, and we need lots of people to do it. That is the only way that I see that we will get improvements through the prison. I don't even like calling Bridgewater State Hospital a hospital, because I know it's not a hospital. It is a prison, and we all hate to use that word for Bridgewater State, but truth is truth. It's set up as a prison. And unfortunately, you know, we need to make sure that that gets changed. And the only way that's going to happen is we keep pushing with our voices. The Disability Law Center has spoken year after year. I think it's, Donna can correct me, but I think it's about 8 years now, where they constantly, you know, talk about the problems at Bridgewater State Hospital. A report is submitted to the legislators, and their backs are all turned. Nothing happens. Year after year, these reports, nothing happens. The buildings are infested with mold. They're using restraints. There is no air conditioning in the summertime for these folks. On and on I can go. So definitely we need to make sure that we keep up the pressure, we keep up the voices, we keep them loud. And but I will mention, we do have a couple heroes in the legislators. One of them is Jamie Eldridge. He's a senator.
I love him. I love Jamie Eldridge. You're right. You hit it right on the spot. He is one politician that I'm legislative member I'm very fond of. There's a few others, too.
Yeah, Leona, he has been on a couple of willing to come on, and he has come on a couple of our Zoom calls, and he is just phenomenal. He is doing his best to get the word out. He's gone on a couple of tours at our request to go in, physically walk through the buildings and see for himself so that he can get the communications back to the legislators. He's just phenomenal. We have a Representative Balser, who has bill number H2063, the transfer of Bridgewater State Hospital to the DMH. And we have Senator Sidney Friedman, who is also involved in mental health illness. So we do have some heroes out there that are trying to help us with this, but we need more, and we need to keep pushing.
Can I interrupt you just for a minute? The ones that you're talking about who are trying to get the issues transferred to DMH, can you or Donna, can you, someone send that to me so I can get it out to all the groups that we are connected with to support these goals, and also to support the legislative members that are pushing for it?
Absolutely. I'll get that to you, Leona.
Okay, and hopefully maybe there's going to be some kind of petition on change.org or something that can be circulated. We need to get supporters for these things, because I am fully agreeable when it comes to transferring the mentally ill cases into the places where they should be in the first place, and that's residential treatment facilities with the DMH or whomever has some kind of organization to deal with the mentally ill instead of prisons.
Yeah. Leona, part of the problem with Bridgewater State Hospital is some of the legislators feel that there's a security issue there, and therefore they need the Department of Corrections in place. I am not against that.
The Department of Corrections, I hate to say it, but the Department of Corrections needs to have somebody overseeing them. So when they talk about safety issues, we need to look at the safety issues of the incarcerated by the prison staff, prison officials, and guards. And I'm not saying all of them. There's a lot of good ones, but there's a lot of them that need to be exposed.
Absolutely. Let me just finish what I was saying there, and then I want to touch base on one more item that the advocacy group did together on a tour of Worcester Jail, and then I'll end my conversation. But a quick fix until we can get something in place would be to allow the Department of Corrections to stay at Bridgewater State Hospital, not in charge, keep, and I am totally against WellPath. There are a lot of good people that work in there, but the leadership is absolutely horrible. So my thought is, you know, we get a new contractor in there to run Bridgewater State Hospital, have the Department of Mental Health move in as the oversight, let the Department of Corrections and the new contractor report directly into the Department of Mental Health, and you have some type of a fix there until we can fix the system. You know, small steps will get us somewhere. No steps are going to get us nowhere.
True.
So the last thing I want to touch on is the family advocacy group. We went on a tour of the Worcester Jail, and it was like day and night in comparison to Bridgewater State Hospital and the Worcester Jail. Superintendent David Tuttle was just phenomenal. And he explained everything, brought us on, I guess it was about 2 or 3 hour tour, and it was night and day. And I could not believe that that was a jail. And my son is sitting in a prison that he shouldn't be. He should be sitting in a Department of Mental Health facility receiving the proper treatment so that he can get better, along with the other 250, patients that are there. So I will close on those comments, and I will let somebody else go ahead and speak. Thank you very much, Leona.
I want to thank you. I want to thank any one of you that are advocating. And even if you have loved ones inside that are going through that, I also know that you're advocating for all of them. And that's the thing that makes it even better. You're considerate in all cases. And I wish that more people like ACLU and other organizations out there would be involved in trying to push for more appropriate residential treatment for these individuals.
Harry, yeah, I couldn't agree more with what you said about DMH overseeing parts of Bridgewater State Hospital, because the difference that I have seen at the DMH hospitals is incredible, to be honest with you. And I want to talk about nutrition, just nutrition alone at DMH versus Bridgewater. Why is nutrition at a DMH facility so much better than at Bridgewater State Hospital? And, you know, when we talk about nutrition for those with mental health needs, most are on some type of medication. We all know that, you know, the medication has many side effects. It can make you extremely hungry and, you know, cause cravings. And, you know, when I read through some of the DLC report and I read the part about nutrition and how there's inadequate, diet for our loved ones there. You know, some need a special diet, and they're not able to obtain it. Some, you know, they're starving, asking for more food, and they just don't have it to give it to them. How is that healthy? How is that therapeutic? And if a person, you know, served in the facility don't have access to canteen money, they can't spend that money to buy something a little extra for themselves. And, you know, proper nutrition affects the entire well-being of an individual. And when you're hungry, that can cause you to become angry. It causes mood swings. It causes you to, you know, have lack of sleep. And, you know, those things can increase behavioral changes that staff can take, you know, as misconduct. And that's documented against an individual when, in fact, it's the hospital that's not providing proper nutrition. But yet, at a DMH facility, they have an open kitchen. Their food is so much better. They have access to snacks 24/7, you know, healthy water, not water that has to be obtained from a fountain in their, you know, their room that, you know, is used to flush the toilet. I'm sorry, but, you know, everyone should have access to clean drinking water, not with particles floating in it or smelling like it came out of the ocean on a bad day, how is that therapeutic and healthy? And, you know, at DMH, that's something that's given to everyone in the facility as a basic need. And it just really bothers me that we have individuals, again, in Bridgewater State Hospital that need the highest level of care, but yet they're given the least level of care.
I trained in 2006. I trained with the Department of Corrections. I was training through a contracted agency out of Virginia, and it was in mental health management. I did some work in training at Bridgewater State. And I'll tell you, first of all, let me talk about the water that you just mentioned, because I got ready to drink some of the water in the fountain there, and they told me no. They took me in a room where they keep all this fresh water, bottled water. They said that was for the prisoners. That's just the water issue. Now, as far as there was one guard, female guard, who told me that we weren't supposed to talk to the incarcerated there. And I told my supervisor at the time about it. And she told me, Leona, she said, that's her. She said, I talk to them all the time. They need to be able to interact. They need to be able to talk with others that are employed as well. I never, after the training that I went through, I didn't stay with them because it would have been a conflict of interest because my loved one at the time was not in Massachusetts. And so I ended up leaving, but she did offer me to talk to a friend of hers who worked at a mental health facility in Middleborough. She said they weren't connected with the penal system. But these are some of the issues that what you girls and what the gentleman is talking about is that we need to be able to interact with these individuals. And we need to give them that clean water and that proper food, because that has a lot to do with the mental health of any individual, especially when it comes to mentally ill. But any individual at all needs to be able to eat and drink appropriately without having to go through all this maggots that I'm hearing about from people on Facebook and all these other injustices when it comes to the food that they're giving to these incarcerated individuals.
And this is why it's so important to back up what Harry said also as far as getting the legislators involved. We do have some great legislators out there that have listened to us, that want to hear our stories, and that truly want to step up and help. But there are so many out there that are totally clueless to what is going on in the system. And most of them don't respond to Harry's emails because they don't want to be the first one to possibly raise their hand and maybe take some ownership of wanting to get involved. Nobody wants to get involved until something tragic happens. When something tragic happens and it involves the mental health scenario, you know, everyone's so quick to comment, and I would love to gather some of those folks that are making comments and put them in a room and, you know, ask them if they've never had something happen to them and how would they feel if it was their loved one that was being raked over the coals. Our legislators need to hear the true stories of what brought them to Bridgewater State Hospital and what caused their illness, what caused that situation. We have legislators that just don't care because they don't want their name associated with anything that has to do with possibly helping someone that has a mental health disability. And it's so wrong. These facilities, whether it's Bridgewater or a DMH facility, from what I have seen, there are very few that really get outside help and support. They rely on the facility to help them to get better, to help them with their illness, and to help them get rehabilitated back into the community. And if we don't have the right people working in those facilities, if we don't have our legislators paying attention to what's going on inside, you know, we're just opening up this gateway of more and more people being stuck in a facility that is not getting the proper help. So we got to keep put pushing and pushing and pushing these legislators and holding them accountable to help. And like I said, and small voices matter, and we need more and more voices to stop bringing their stories forward. Don't be afraid of the stigma. Talk about it, because everyone has a story. Everybody knows someone that is struggling with a mental health disability. Don't wait for something tragic to happen where you're stuck on the other side now, and it's a big problem.
And Leona, I think to avoid some of this mismanagement, what really has come to light, you know, and what Annette is saying, what the legislators need to know and need to act on, is that it is imperative that the DMH gets in charge of this population at Bridgewater State Hospital. And I have, like Annette, I have been advocating for 10 years. I've done it with diplomacy. I've done it with kindness. I've done it with gratitude. I've done it with politeness. But I still want to do those things. But now it has come to a point where I'm doing it with insistence. We have to insist that we get the change. And here's some of the points that I'd like to bring up about the DMH. DMH policies align better with the needs of people with mental illness. So not the DOC, but the Department of Mental Health, they're the policies that align better with the needs, the specialized needs of people with mental illness. DMH focuses on a therapeutic and healing environment, something we lack now. DMH has superior regulations in concerning when they're training their staff. Their regulations are better. DMH has a more developed de-escalation policy, and DMH must comply with state law regarding seclusion and restraint, something BSH has failed to do. And according to Tatum Pritchard of the Disability Law Center, and they're amazing, amazing champions, moving Bridgewater State Hospital to the Department of Mental Health would mean better outcomes for patients. And here's why I'm so strident and so insistent on this day, Leona. It's because the murky past, the lawsuits, the lack of level of high care provided by WellPath means that this correlates with higher rates of patient mortality, that's deaths. So more patient mortality than publicly managed health services. And then the Disability Law Center says that their illegal use of chemical restraints, something that they clean up the term and they call them emergency treatment orders, but they're chemical restraints. And the DLC says that using these restraints uses power to control an individual's behavior or to resolve arguments and can lead to escalation of conflict and can ultimately result in serious injury and even death. And I have personally seen several deaths, and I get a lot of inside information, and you know, I'm told this is an ongoing problem. We can't allow valuable human beings, loved human beings, family members, our family members, to lose their lives to a lack of care.
Mm. It's powerful. Exactly, too. Exactly. Have any of you thought about joining some of these groups on Facebook, mental health professionals, psychiatric mental and behavioral health professionals? They have all kinds of groups, and I'm one. For years, I've been connecting. When I had my organization nationwide, I've been connecting and networking with advocates across the country. And it's helped a lot because the problems, as I say all the time, they're in every state, even though they're being resolved or managed differently. And this is a major issue, that connecting with a lot of these organizations and groups on Facebook that are dealing with the mentally ill may be an awesome thing to do, to connect with FFIMI and others like NAMI to get your point across, and also to get the support to do this in all the states.
I agree, Leona, and I have aligned myself with MASC, that's Massachusetts Against Solitary Confinement. I'm actually going to a fundraiser for the Prisoners Legal Services because I respect them so highly and want to support them. That's next Tuesday, November 29th. And you have connected me with Shattering Silence, a national coalition, and my FEMI colleagues have agreed to align and join with them. So what you're saying, the networking is very important. And I know Annette is doing work with her local police department. She may want to speak on that as well.
Sure. I tried to just get involved with a lot of local community groups. I actually offer a parent support group at my studio for any parent or anyone that has a loved one that is struggling. We get together monthly, and we just talk and share information and support one another. I will say that I am trying to get more actively involved with the clinicians through my local community that work with the crisis intervention team and the local police department, because I feel that that's a very important piece on a community level to start. They are also against incarcerating those with mental health. And they help so many people in the community that have either mental health disabilities or substance abuse and are recovering. And, you know, they try to prevent things from happening. And sadly, if we do have to go through the court system or push someone through the court system, the last thing they want to see happen is for someone to be sent to Bridgewater. They advocate to get those that they can into a DMH facility. And, you know, it brings me to another point that I just want to quickly make about the court system. You know, unfortunately, when we do have to go through the court system to get someone help and support, the judges have a lot of control, and the court clinicians have a lot of control as far as where they send those for evaluations. And, you know, not everyone should be sent to Bridgewater State Hospital for an evaluation. And, you know, I think some work needs to be done there, but that could be another topic for another day. But getting involved with local groups, local charities, schools, I do belong to a couple of Facebook groups myself where it's more for those that are struggling and need help and support. I like to offer advice and inspiration to those folks to, you know, to keep pushing along and not give up. But that's it. Every voice, every resource, every group matters. And the more we can get involved, the better for everyone, because we all have a common goal here. All of us have a goal to help those that are struggling with mental health. But our focus is right now, what can we do to continue to support Bridgewater State Hospital and aligning them with DMH? How do we get our legislators to listen to us more? What can we do to really drive this, especially with the new governor coming into place? I think we need to put together some type of a tactful approach where we can actually get in front of the governor. Zoom calls are great. I think meeting with certain senators are wonderful, but I think we need to rally as a team and advocate with these legislators, but truly get in front of the governor. She needs to hear the personal impact that this has on the families as well and the loved ones that are suffering, truly suffering in a facility, not getting the proper care that they need.
I believe Maura Healey is going to make a good governor. I think she's going to be fair. and she may be workable. I really believe that. I don't know why, but I just have a good feeling about her. Even though she was the Attorney General and, you know, worked in that office, I just have good vibes about her. I don't know why.
One of the main advice that Charlie Baker said he passed on to Maura Healey was to get out of the building and meet with the people. So it's my goal to get her out of the building and meet with us at some point. And bless my husband's heart, because he's already written to her. And we're just going to, you know, contact her as soon as possible and educate her as to our needs. And I think what I would like to see is that she understands the depth of the heartache of families. We are under such extraordinary experiences that I'm glad they're extraordinary, because I wouldn't want everybody to go through them. And I want her to see these amazing people under these extraordinary heartaches, and that she'll rise up and help us. And that's the one area that I would plead with this audience, you know, is to increase your empathy and increase your compassion. And as Annette said, every voice matters. Add your voice to ours. We need a sea change, an entire change of the system. We're told again and again, the system is broken. The system tells us the system is broken. So let's fix it. I heard a statement that I thought was odd, and I haven't really been able to get all the facts yet, but someone said that taxpayers would rather fix and look for the solution than prevent. It's more satisfying for them to fix what's broken than to prevent something from being broken, and that's just not acceptable. We have to, you know, try to do prevention and you know, and then fix what is broken, but then prevent the next tragedy.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with that, Donna. And, you know, I want to say, too, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's you know, improving, making improvements on what is already there. And, you know, I do want to say that there are some really good staff members at Bridgewater State Hospital. I feel that, you know, a lot of them do care and they do want to help. But like Harry said, too, it comes in leadership. If leadership is not in the front line with their staff, with their team, in the trenches, on their, you know, knees, helping and supporting and really getting to know everyone that's in the unit, you know, the staff can only do so much. And they're at the mercy of their leadership. You have someone that may want to implement a new change. I'll use occupational therapy as an example. You know, you have an occupational therapist that wants to introduce a new program. They have to go through so much red tape to get approval, not only from, you know, the hospital administrator, and then the administration has to go to the DOC to implement and make a change. It should not have taken over 2 years to get a yoga program introduced into the facility, and there should be more and more and more programs to help the loved ones at Bridgewater State Hospital, to keep them more engaged, to keep them motivated, to keep them inspired, not, you know, pacing the halls day after day after day after day, just biding their time. That is not therapeutic here. And if leadership can't see that, if leadership is not stepping up and wanting to make their facility better, wanting to implement the change, then the staff members, they give up too. They don't want to do it because they know it's too much trouble. It's too hard to get anything done. And who does that ultimately hurt? It hurts all of the patients that truly need the support and the help the most.
Leona, there's so many times I've been so frustrated because, as Annette mentioned earlier, it can take weeks, months, years to get the changes. And, you know, we have to, the staff has to treat others the way they want to be treated. As you mentioned about the water, that still goes on today. They have water coolers for the staff, but they don't have water coolers for the patients. When COVID hit, you know, there were, of course, there were restrictions, but then the staff started ordering their meals in and telling us we couldn't order our meals in for our loved ones because they didn't want any excess traffic coming in. And yet they were getting their meals, and our loved ones with poor nutritious meals there couldn't have the benefit of getting their meals ordered in so that they could enjoy a meal with their family. But that said, I am always trying to regroup. I'm actually trying to regroup and work with the administration, you know, anew, try to do as best we can. And, you know, I will do my best to make things better with the current administration, if possible, if they listen to the families. But, you know, it still is the ultimate goal that they don't, the population of Bridgewater State Hospital does not belong under the Department of Correction policies. It belongs under the Department of Mental Health. And that is really our bottom line. And it's amazing because this was FEMI's goal. And then along came Bridgewater Families Group, and started by a wonderful family member named Tom. And this group has coalesced to become a very powerful advocacy group. Annette and I and others, you know, are part of that wonderful group. And just a little shout out before our time is up. You know, I just have such love and respect and compassion for my fellow family members. They have, you know, have had to suffer great heartaches to see the deterioration of their loved ones' mental health, maybe physical health, the lack of resources available, all of that, extreme circumstances, and they are amazing human beings with unconditional love. And Leona, you're among that group. I know you have unconditional love for your loved one, and, you know, I just wish the best for all of us.
Thank you.
I just want to say,
Annette, I know that you have to leave right now, and I just want to thank you for coming on and let your son know that he, as well as others throughout the penal system that are going through so much affliction, are in my prayers. I pray for the prisoners all the time who are being afflicted, persecuted, deprived, provoked, harassed, abused, whatever the case may be. Let him know that we are praying for him.
Thank you so much, Leona. And, you know, I'm humbled because I truly will never leave this group, even if my son is not in any facility. This is something I have a deep passion for, and I just want those that need the help the most to be able to get it in a humane way. So thank you for allowing me to be a part of this call today.
God has a purpose for everything that you and the others are doing. He has a purpose, and as you just said, you don't have a loved one in, but you know that there's something that you have to do. And I hope and pray that people in the audience and elsewhere will get more involved, especially those who have loved ones who are in mental illness, in mental facilities, or in the prisons, wherever they may be. Join forces. Taxpayers think that their dollars are going towards the incarcerated population, regardless of what their situation is, when in fact, a lot of their funding is going towards the staff, is going towards the wrong people. We need to fight for justice for those incarcerated. And I want to bring up one quick fact, too. When we talk about the mentally ill, there are people in prison who were abused as children, who were violated as children, who went through all kinds of different traumatic situations which left them psychologically disabled as well. So when we think of the mental illnesses, we have to look at all the dynamics that went on in someone's life to understand what they were thinking and what they were doing at the time. Another thing is they got rid of all the mental health facilities, all the Taunton State Hospital and all these other places. They got rid of them years ago when they shouldn't have, leaving a lot of these people with mental illnesses out there vulnerable. And this is why these people need to spend their money on reestablishing mental health facilities that's going to work for these incarcerated individuals. And I just wanted to say that. Now, somehow we have 30 minutes left, so if anyone wants to take over, I'm going to put myself on mute and let you take over, Donna.
I would like
okay.
to
Okay. Okay, here
do,
we go.
Do we have any do we have any callers?
Yes.
Yeah, I would like to speak up.
Oh, please
Hello?
Do.
I had a loved one at Bridgewater State Hospital, and what I've seen in the, he's no longer there, but the level of care that they get at Bridgewater is not good whatsoever. The person served should not have to go to a sink, water, to make their oodles and noodles. And another thing that my loved one has told me is that the staff will eat food, throw it in the trash, and here comes a person served, and they're picking out of the trash a half-eaten bagel. And I've brought it to the staff's attention so many times, and it continued to happen. And my loved one's been at the Department of Mental Health for the past 7 months, okay? Every time I've gone to see him, just the respect and the compassion you get from the staff, because they walk you up and they walk you back down, they're so friendly, they treat you like a person, not like when you go into Bridgewater. Yes, they have good staff in Bridgewater, but they also have some of them that should not be working with the mentally ill. Okay? And my son, what he has witnessed at DMH is when a person is triggered, the staff don't go right to the chemical restraint. They calm them down. They talk to them. Where in Bridgewater State Hospital, he would see somebody having a problem, and instead of this, when the person served is calmed down, the staff still goes in there, calls everybody in the black suits, and then drags them into this room, and then chemically restrain them and shoot them with that medicine that puts them out for the whole day. You know, it shouldn't be like that. That type of care should not be happening. They're treating them almost like they're not, okay, they have mental illness. Let's put them in Bridgewater, throw away the key because they fell under the criminal justice. They did something wrong, and they should be treated as people, not like people that you just put away, throw away the key. I mean, you have people there that can't speak English. Where my loved one said that he witnessed somebody banging on the window during COVID, and none of the staff could speak the kid's language. It was Spanish, and that's sad. Here's this kid banging on the window. They don't know what his issue is because there was nobody to speak his language, you know? And you have staff at Bridgewater that doesn't call them person served. They call them inmates. And then you have the higher-ups, and this was I heard this from Roland himself, okay, that says, I go through every unit, which I asked my loved one. He said, I've never seen him walk through my unit, which is a lie. You understand? This guy,
Michelle, can you explain who you're speaking about?
Roland Pelletier.
Yeah,
Roland Pelletier, yes. The hospital administrator. When he met with our families, okay, he said he told us all this glorifying stuff. And we were like, wow, this guy's going to change this hospital. He has all this. He was telling that he was transparent. Oh, well, if I was in your shoes, these people are my family. Well, guess what? He was never in our shoes, okay? And he doesn't treat our loved ones or everybody else's loved ones the same as what we go through. You understand? When our loved ones were locked up 22 hours a day, the staff back then met with us every single day, which Johnny can agree. It was a lot of tears because we were fighting for our loved ones. 22 hours a day locked in a room all by yourself. You already have mental illness, and your brain is just thinking the worst. Now, at Bridgewater, everything's swept under the rug, okay? Last month, there was suicides there. You never heard about it. You understand? And I just think it's wrong because the higher-ups are sweeping stuff under the rug. You know, I feel that even though my loved one's not at Bridgewater, I'm never going to stop fighting for Bridgewater because I'm going to fight for Bridgewater for the people that don't have a voice, that doesn't have loved ones, because I feel they are mistreated. And one thing my loved one said also is the lack of training. You understand? My loved one was given the wrong medication because it wasn't even a nurse on duty. And I already spoke to the staff because I'm very vocal when my loved one was at Bridgewater, because anything that was wrong, I spoke out. They may have not liked it, but it got things through. And there was no need, like he said. The cleaning person one time, they put her in a position because they were lack of staff. If you go on WellCat's website and you read the comments that people write about WellPath, it's terrible. They pay people off to keep their mouth shut. And if you don't pull the line with them, if you don't follow what they want, they fire you. You understand? If you don't work, okay, a double shift, sometimes one person did 3 shifts. Now, how is a person able to deal with people with mental health doing 3 shifts, 8-hour shifts? That's mandatory. You need to stay there, you know? And I just think it's wrong.
Michelle, yep. What would be your top suggestions to make things better? What do you think would be your top suggestions?
I feel that Bridgewater State Hospital should be in the care of DMH. I think DOC should be put right out of there. And one thing that they do at Bridgewater, the people that work there, they Google a person's name to find out why they're there. Okay? Also, when your loved one's leaving the visitor room, they shouldn't be put up against a wall, and be packed down in front of their families, because that is heart-wrenching. When my loved one was told to stand up against the wall and he was packed down, I left there crying, because it makes you so sad what these guys go through. And when the people come with the black suit to shoot the person, you're causing trauma to other people that are there. You know, I just think the conditions at Bridgewater is terrible. Just like I said, my loved one was there for 6 years. They never even wiped down his mattress. That's disgusting. You understand? I just think they're not treated like human beings there. And the reason they keep them there, my feeling is because of the money factor. Now, there's plenty of people, even people that are on this call, that their loved ones should not be at Bridgewater. They can get the better care at DMH. You understand? You're in a locked facility anyways. You have your own room. You have your own bathroom. You have a snack thing where you can have snacks. You can have home-cooked meals. That is compassion. My loved one's at Worcester Recovery Center, okay? That's compassion. You go in that building, you feel the compassion that's in there. And you go in Bridgewater, and it's just a gut-wrenching thing that how these people are treated, you know? And, yeah, our loved ones have somebody that's speaking and fighting for them, but what about the people that have nobody, that are mistreated, you know? I mean, they take advantage of people, because when you order a secure pack, I'm sorry, I'm on a roll, but you order a secure pack, okay? And it gets sent to your loved one. Well, somebody was already gone. They took that secure pack, emptied it all out, and they used the prizes for bingo. Now, somebody paid $90 for that secure pack. It's so wrong, you know. And the food that they feed them is just disgusting. and the gym is full of asbestos, which is cancer-causing. And here you are, the staff has a bubbler, but the patients are not, the person served is not able to use that bubbler, you know, and it's
you
not
know,
right.
Michelle, you have to wonder what it's going to take, because after a very disturbing January 2022 report, Disability Law Center report, which documented much of what you're talking about, the families were alarmed, and they really began to increase their voices against a lot of these practices, the chemical restraints, as you mentioned, the asbestos, the lack of dental care. You mentioned, well, others have mentioned the mold. You've mentioned quite a bit, the water. You've mentioned the water. And so family members started to increase their voices. And the press took great interest and wrote a barrage of articles that were not favorable to Bridgewater State Hospital. And the legislators began to meet with us and to go in and tour the Bridgewater State Hospital.
But what happened in July 2022, when
the next biannual report came out, was there any improvement, Michelle?
Nope. But Donna, when the legislators went in there, they were not allowed to talk to the person served, which I think is wrong. All of a sudden, when my loved one was there and the legislators went through, the higher-ups were walking around. They were talking to the person served, which you never saw any of that. So Bridgewater put on a big old show for that. And you know what it's going to take? It's going to take for a bunch of our families to get together, go to the state house, and rally in front of the state house, go in the state house with our signs and let our voices be heard. Now, I am.
You know what, Michelle? I couldn't agree more. There's what they call Advocacy Day, and you know they invite the public in to go office to office, and that's exactly what we should do, is what you're saying, Michelle.
Yeah, I just think it's got to be changed. I mean, it's just like not only just that, but on Advocacy Day is to write our stories. We don't got to put our personal, like, we don't got to put our names, but write our story, copy it, hand it to these legislators. You understand? So
that's a great idea.
You know, I mean,
and I would like to add, and I know you've done this, Michelle, is that each of us, each family member should contact their own constituents. Legislators will put more weight on the wishes and the push from their own constituents. So that's another thing we should be doing on a regular basis.
Also, Donna, remember the person, the legislator that wanted to go to a court hearing with one of the persons served, and he was denied, even though the person served said, you can come along. And what upset me when my son went in front of the judge, the lack of the judge to even look at my son, understand? And even to say, hey, you know, you've done a great job, good luck in DMH, nothing. Never even made eye contact, which really disgusts me. You understand? Because my son is a human being just like everybody else. And when I watched the court hearing, the way they treated those people that got in front of the judge is disgusting. Just totally disgusting. It's just sad. You know, they don't choose to have mental illness.
Along with you and many of the other family members we've met with, Michelle, you know, I did find it very disturbing that these psychologists, of all people, psychologists who should understand the ills of the mental illness, you know, to hold it against someone with mental illness, their lack of grooming or their lack of engagement or their, you know, the depressive state, to not be supportive of them and try to get them to move on and allow them to move on to where they're going to get a bigger level of care, as you said, with your son at the DMH and, you know, the perks that he has, that he can breathe easier. He can be more of a human being. It's almost, I've seen photographs of the rooms at Worcester Recovery Center, and with a nice bathroom, and it's almost like a studio apartment. It's wonderful. You know, it's wonderful that they have a better quality of life than being crunched in an unsanitary, tight unit with not much space to breathe and to be and to be productive. It's just a very sad, sad situation. We need new facilities built, and we need them built now. They need better care. They, you know, it could be anyone's loved one, Michelle. Anyone can be affected. You and I have been, you know, we're at Bridgewater together for a long time, and we saw people, you know, go to great lengths, people who didn't have much money and were in wheelchairs, and people who were wealthy and had huge international jobs. We've seen all of those people with loved ones. It can happen to anyone. And for other people to not have the compassion, you know, it's just beyond my understanding.
You know what's sad also, and I just thought of it, at Bridgewater, right, you got to fill out a paper and put the paper in order to get somebody to come talk to you if you're having an issue. We are DMH, a staff is there, somebody will be right down to see you. And I just think that the level of care that Bridgewater gives the person served there is terrible. I'm sorry. And there's somebody that's been there 32 years. 32 years, can you just imagine that? It's just wrong. You know, I think they want to keep people there, and it's for financial gain.
Donna, there's exactly. Someone else that's on the show that I don't know if he or she wants to say anything, but
That would be great. That would be
Thank
great.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Hey, Colin from Springfield.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Springfield.
Okay.
I got an 8-inch cock that's fat. Need somebody that can worship it. Think you can handle that?
Disgusting.
I'm going to force you to drink to come.
You know, we've had a call like that once before. That person is mentally ill, really needs help. I just shut him down. He's got a foul mouth. I don't know. Sometimes we get calls like this, and it's pitiful, because here you are talking about the mentally ill that deserve to have help, and we get callers like this that don't have enough sense to go for help, but we'll try to get into radio shows to interfere with it. But,
right.
John, I'm going to, if there's anyone else on that hasn't spoken yet, just say your name. We got 2202-2853-9855-1669. And we have 11 minutes left. So, Donna, if you want to continue, I'm going to, again, put myself on mute unless we get another call.
Yes, please speak up if you're just listening, that's fine. But if you're on to speak with us, please do.
Donna, if no one else is going to speak, this is Harry. I just have another question for Leona, if she's still listening.
Leona, are you there, available?
I am myself on mute. I'm off of mute now. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Harry. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thanks, Leona. So my question, you had mentioned earlier that you've had discussions all over the country in different states, different prisons, different facilities, different people. Are there any one state that points out as being better than another state or all other states?
Well, I'm going to be on December 1st, I'm going to be interviewing again Brian Winters, and he was a legislative member in Vermont. He is no longer a politician, and he doesn't side with either party, but he did found an American Union which is for the cause. Like with your cause right now, the mentally ill in these prisons, he probably would be a good one to talk about the situations in Vermont. Vermont and Maine and one other state are the only three states in the United States that have never taken away the rights of prisoners to vote. Vermont and Maine and other states, they seem to be, well, at least those two that I'm talking about, seem to be more humane with their incarcerated population. In Florida, Society First with Denise Caffey, I've interviewed them a couple of times, and they are working on a different issue in Florida. They're working on life without parole, I believe it is. Solitary confinement is a major issue that's being discussed in a lot of states, including Massachusetts, and restrictive housing units. Mariam Jacobs, and Donna knows Mariam, she's from the Netherlands, and she speaks a lot about the damage, the psychological damaging effects of people that are kept in solitary confinement and in restrictive housing units, situations like that. We have people in other countries, Franz Kurz advocating for the wrongfully convicted, two or three of them in Ohio, Jan Banning from the Netherlands, who has been advocating for a wrongfully convicted female, Christine, in Georgia. And there's just a lot of organizations around the country that are fighting for different injustices. But I wanted to say, people forget when they talk about advocating in their own state, because their own state is, at the time, is where the problem is. A lot of people forget we have relatives in different states. A lot of people in different states have relatives in Massachusetts and vice versa. So when we talk about these issues and networking, we're talking about these issues because we have outlets out there, people that can advocate for this state and what your cause is, simply because they have relatives or friends that are in this state. And it happens all over the country. So when we are advocating for the mentally ill, let's look at those advocates in other states that are also advocating for the mentally ill, or those in other states that have family members or friends in this state that have mental illnesses or that are fighting for mental illnesses. This is what I call networking, because we can get so much more accomplished. When a petition is filed, it doesn't need to be just people in Massachusetts that sign that petition. It could be people in other states that have friends or family members in Massachusetts or whatever state they're going with. We need to start looking at working in a national level, even though every state is different. I realize this is not a federal situation, because it's up to the governors to pardon. It's up to the governors to make the changes. And unfortunately, we don't always have the right governors in place to be for the cause. So that's one of the reasons why I say networking is very, very crucial.
And can I add to that, Leona? And, you know, I couldn't agree more about networking, because it gives a collective strength. So I want to encourage all my fellow advocates, my fellow family members, my friends. You know, Advocacy Day at the Massachusetts State House on the Grand Staircase and in the offices is May 21. Maybe this is a different year. I looked it up. It says May 21st. So I'm not sure. I'm not seeing the for 2022 or 2023. But I'll be sure to get the word out when I do find out the exact date.
Yeah, you know, Donna, I think that would be a great idea. You know, our group going in there, and, you know, we've already know some of the legislators. That may be, you know, a great opportunity for a jump and make an awareness.
That's right. We could even maybe cajole them, Harry, to walk along to the other offices with us, but they may have to be available for other constituents. But I'm planning. I think we'll do a great job together, Harry.
When you get ready to do it, please let us all know so that we can make it go viral on the internet, on Facebook. I also want to say one last thing. This is just a bit of encouragement. I don't know about who reads the Bible, but in the book of Daniel, and I want everybody to know this, in the book of Daniel, I believe it's chapter 8, it's talking about 2,300. Now, a lot of times, we know the Bible is symbolic, but that 2,300 brings me to 2023. in upcoming year. So I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of activity going on in the year 2023, which is right around the corner. So maybe what you're going to be doing might be a really successful event as well.
Thank you, Leona. And also, you know, I don't want to cut Harry off. I'm hoping he'll add a little more. But before our time is up, I just, you know, I know she's not on, but I really want to thank my colleague, Annette Burke. She's really great at advocating and articulating, and she's all about prevention. She's very savvy in the area of prevention and beyond. And Harry as well, you know, I've come to have these amazing advocates. We've coalesced together, you know, like a bunch of magnets. And, we're, you know, just it's just a thrill to have this strong coalition of caring, compassionate family members. So I thank Annette, and I thank Harry, and I thank all of you who are out there supporting us and supporting one another.
And we miss Michelle.
Can I add to that, Harry?
And we, yes, you did. Thank you. And we miss Michelle's voice.
I know. It was so nice to hear from my Michelle. Michelle and I go way back, Leona. We were part of the original group, you know, with Bridgewater. We were there together for a long time. We actually coordinated and did the art program together for the families. And Michelle's just an honest, authentic, and caring, and loving voice. And, you know, I'm just so grateful for the Michelles and the Harrys and the Annettes and the Toms and the Bobs, my husband. I'm so grateful for all of us.
You all are blessed. I wanted to say, Donna, real quickly, you have 3 minutes left. So can you let the audience know how they can help or how they can contact you or the organization to do anything that they can to help with this entire situation you're working on?
That would be amazing. If they go to FFIMI at inquiry, INQUIRY, at gmail.com. And, you know, our facilitator, our FEMI facilitator, they can ask any question. They can inquire with our inquiry, and we will get right back to them, and we will plug them in and give them support or whatever it is they need. And if they're willing to step up and help us, we surely welcome that. So it's I'm just going to repeat it, FFIMI at inquiry at Gmail, or I'm sorry, FFIMI at inquiry.gmail.com.
Okay. FFIMI. Again, I want to thank you, Donna, for coming on and for all that you are about, everything that you girls and guys have been working on. And I want to have you back any time that you have the availability. Please let me know so we can bring you back on and talk more about these issues.
Excellent.
Audience, I would like to have you contact my family, friends, and individuals who are mentally ill, and in any way that you can help, whether it be making phone calls, writing letters or emailing or whatever the case may be, even funding if Donna, if you have a thing on your, a donation or a contribution thing on your website. But any way you can help at all, audience, please try to do something. This is something that is very, very imperative to get help for these mentally ill. And again, try to encourage DMH and American Psychological Association and legislative members to please get involved, to be more involved with all of this.
And, you know, bottom line, we talk about those with serious mental illness, but many of the individuals who go into incarceration start out in trauma, And jails and prisons just increase the trauma. So it's treatment and not punishment for all of these human beings, and restorative efforts for all who, you know, can just try to take advantage and support, offering support and humane treatment. And that's the bottom line.
Exactly. Donna, thank you again. And hopefully after the holidays, maybe after New Year's, you could probably find some time to come back on. I'm interested in what you do, and I know that so many people out there are also interested and grateful to organizations like yours. So once again, I thank you for being on the show, and we are now going to end this episode. Audience, thank you for listening in, and please share whatever you have heard, share the contact information, and have a nice holiday, all of you. Thank you.
Thanks, Leona. God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless.